ABC Radio Australia.
Conflict in the Middle East is fueling a spike in demand for dual citizenship, according to the head of Nauru's Economic and Climate Resilience Citizenship Program. The Citizenship by Investment Scheme allows people to apply for a Nauruan passport by making a significant financial contribution to the country. Joining us now is the head of that program, Edward Clark. Edward, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me and good morning to you.
Not a problem at all. It's an interesting story, this one. So how much of an increase in interest is Nauruan citizenship? How much interest have you seen?
We've had initially a small increase, but what is more evident is the number of increasing inquiries we are now getting from the Middle East. It takes some time for applicants to obviously gather all of the necessary documentation. And so because of the increase in inquiries, this typically translates or flows through to an increase in volume. So I'd say we're yet to see a significant increase, but the inquiries have increased significantly.
I see. And are there any particular countries that the interest is mainly coming from?
We have already got quite an established presence or I guess market reputation in countries like Kuwait. So we've had Kuwait currently makes up or is the second largest driver of volume for applications for the Nauru citizenship program.
I see. So I understand it's been the threat of conflict that's driving a lot of this interest. Can you explain, I guess, how the threat of that conflict is prompting people to consider a second citizenship? Like, what reasons have you heard?
Yeah, so the driver is primarily because it provides optionality to people with dual citizenship. And I'll give you an example, and you can only look to cases like in Ukraine where this has actually played out in recent years. And that is where, if conflict does break out, often countries will restrict people from their own of their own nationality from leaving the country. And also there's the risk of mandatory conscription. So I think what a lot of the applicants are seeking is having that optionality, or effectively like an insurance plan, which may, not necessarily, but may give them an exit plan in a time of need, and it may help them to avoid something like military conscription.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that as a motivator, and I guess if they are able to secure citizenship in a place like Nauru, does that also prevent them from being extradited back to the country that they might have come from?
It's an interesting question. I mean, extradition laws are complicated and beyond my area of expertise, but I would imagine it would be quite challenging to extradite someone just for them to then have to serve in the military, as an example.
Yes, no, I understand that. And is there a certain demographic of people, I guess, that you've seen who are expressing the most interest? I mean, look, I imagine somewhat wealthy people would be one, but are we talking young people, like perhaps parents, you know, seeking refuge for their children? Like, is there any particular demographic you can point to?
We have seen quite a lot from the Middle East, large families applying, and the Nauru citizenship program has quite a family-friendly approach. A lot of the other citizenship programs have restrictions on certain family members applying. For example, if they're over a certain age or if they're not financially dependent. So we do see quite a large number of applications from family members. Because we have an inclusive family approach, yes, absolutely, it's parents wanting to get security for their children. And that is what we've seen the most. And in fact, we already have applicants, even our first applicant, which was a German family, wanted that insurance plan for their children.
Right. So when you say a friendly family approach, is that like sort of a a package deal for, say, two parents and children or something like that?
Not a package deal. We just don't have so many restrictions on allowing family members to apply. So, for example, if you wanted to apply for a citizenship program in the Caribbean. They restrict children from being included in the application if they're over the age of 30, as an example, or if they're in paid employment, or if they're married, and we don't have any of those restrictions. So we will allow people to apply as families without restricting anyone if they don't meet that criteria.
I see, I see. It is Monday, March 30, and you're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Kyle Evans, and I'm chatting to the head of Nauru's Economic and Climate Resilience Citizenship Program, Edward Clark, about a spike in demand for dual citizenship. Now, we spoke to you after the first successful candidates were granted Nauruan citizenship. How many people now have Nauruan passports under the program?
We have over 20 successful citizenships having been granted, and we have a pipeline of over 100 applications at the moment. So we've seen quite a significant shift in application volume, and this really started triggering around September last year and has been steady in terms of volume since then.
Oh, I see. And in Australia, Nauru is known as the place where asylum seekers have been sent for offshore processing. Has this coloured the perception of the citizenship by investment scheme at all from, I guess, foreign applicants?
I don't think so. I mean, we very rarely get questions about it. And I think because we don't expect many of the citizens to actually be residing in Nauru, for example, it doesn't come up as a major concern.
I see. And I suppose just on that, so does that mean they don't have to move to Nauru if they are granted citizenship? It's just an option they have, I guess, in their back pocket if they ever want to exercise it?
Exactly. And it may just be, I mean, the entire process can be conducted entirely remote and there is no residency requirement. So yes, like I said earlier, it's more of an insurance plan. So yes, they may want to relocate to Nauru as a contingency, but more likely it's because of the other benefits that dual citizenship provides them, like what we talked about it before, having that backup plan. The other thing that we've seen a lot is driven by mobility. Mm. For example, being able to travel more freely to certain countries. And a recent example of that is a Bangladeshi businessman who's been operating in Singapore as an executive in the banking sector. And he's just started his new a new venture. And he wants to travel to certain jurisdictions, but as a Bangladeshi, it's very challenging for him to get a visa. So this will be a real door opener in terms of him being able to expand his business.
I guess prior to all the conflict that we've seen in the Middle East, like where would the majority of your applicants come from? Would it sort of be the Asia region, or was it still sort of the Middle Eastern region, even before the wars broke out?
We have had applicants from over 20 different countries, so the diversity is quite broad, but yes, certainly China is the biggest driver of volume, and that is true no matter where you look, purely because of the population size.
No, that's understandable. Now, critics of the citizen by investment scheme say they can attract organised criminals and people like oligarchs seeking to evade foreign law enforcement and things like that. Obviously, there was the issue with Andrew Tate and his Vanuatu citizenship a short time ago. Is that a concern for you or the Nauru government?
Well, look, it is a risk of operating a program like that, and we have seen applicants that do have criminal backgrounds try and apply. We have had people try and apply with forged documentation, such as a clean police clearance certificate, which we were able to identify was fraudulent. And we have had applicants apply that we suspect are involved in criminal activity. And while it is a risk, we have a very robust due diligence process, and in terms of the evidence that we require to be able to demonstrate that the source of funds and source of wealth and overall backgrounds of the individuals is very robust, and that enables us to effectively filter out the bad actors from those that are genuine and have gained their wealth legitimately. So I'm very pleased to be able to say, you know, our due diligence process is working very well. Yes, it is always a risk, but I'm very pleased with how those controls have been performing to date.
Out of curiosity, without getting too far into the weeds, but yeah, what kind of things do you have to provide to be granted citizenship? Obviously, you know, beyond your typical, you know, identification documents and things like that.
It's quite extensive. So yes, we do require multiple forms of identification. But we also require, for example, if you're a business owner, we require a lot of documentation relating to those businesses. We require bank statements to be able to evidence where funds are coming from. We'll often require tax certificates if certain situations are not clear, to be able to demonstrate that the applicants are you know, paying tax correctly. We require health certificates to evidence that they are not going to be a potential burden on the Nauru health system as well. It really can depend a lot on the applicant's individual circumstances and where the risks lie. We'll often look at, you know, court documents, as an example, if they've been involved in civil litigation, to assess the kind of risk related to that as well. So it can be very extensive.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting, that's for sure. We'll leave it there, Edward, because we are running out of time. But thanks so much for joining us today on Pacific Beat. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where the program goes from here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was Edward Clark, the CEO of Nauru's Economic and Climate Resilience Citizenship Program.